I'd like to thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak here today about the first confirmed case of multiple resistance to glyphosate and an ALS inhibitor in Palmer Amaranth in Georgia. Since the advent of the synthetic herbicides, starting in 1970, where we saw the first case of herbicide resistance, we've seen a steady increase in the number of unique cases of herbicide-resistant weeds throughout the world. This comes from Dr. Ian Heap's website. Currently, there are 323 resistant biotypes that range over 187 species. There are 15 species with a known resistance to glyphosate and 97 with resistance to the ALS chemistry. One of those weeds is Palmer amaranth, which is the most troublesome weed in cotton production in Georgia and probably throughout the entire Southeast. Just a little bit of background. Herbicide resistance in Palmer amaranth in Georgia, with respect to glyphosate, in 2004, we had a Macon County cotton grower who was unable to control Palmer amaranth with glyphosate. We subsequently determined that in the field at that time, you required a 3x field rate to control it. And greenhouse studies demonstrated that this biotype was significantly different from the susceptible with respect to its response to glyphosate. Since that time, glyphosate resistance has been confirmed across the state in Palmer amaranth. With the ALS inhibitors in 2000, Bill Venzel at the University of Georgia confirmed that we had resistance in the state of Georgia in Palmer amaranth. In 2005, there was an increase in the number of weed control failures in peanut with the ALS chemistry, and greenhouse studies that were done by our former graduate student, Aaron Wise, demonstrated that all 61 accessions that he looked at had some level of resistance to imazapic applied post, and 30 of those accessions were cross-resistant. This just shows you the distribution of counties with glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth in Georgia. You can see that we have a substantial portion of our cotton-producing region that is exhibiting some form of glyphosate resistance, and I know that Dr. Culpepper has suggested by the end of this year he's just going to call the state for Palmer amaranth. With ALS resistance, we have a similar distribution. This is also the peanut-producing region. And if you overlay these, you're going to see that we have our glyphosate resistance and our ALS resistance in close proximity to one another, including counties where we have both types of resistance. So this has made us ask, how long is it going to take for us to see multiple resistance where we have glyphosate resistance and ALS resistance in the same population? Now, whether this is going to happen through some natural genetic mutation, whether it's happening through the movement of seed, or whether it's happening through the transfer of the resistance trait via pollen, I'm not going to argue which is more responsible for this, but we know that it's occurring each of these ways. So the gist of my study, it's all going to start with a field in Macon County that had a glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth population. No ALS herbicides had been applied to this field from 1997 to 2005, and that's when we really detected the glyphosate resistance, was in 2005. So the grower went back in with staple in 2005 and 2006, and in 2006 it was obvious that staple was ineffective at controlling Palmer amaranth in this field. So which brings us to the objective, do we have multiple resistance at this site? There was a field experiments that were conducted in 2007 and 2008 in Macon County, Georgia. It was done in a conventional non-irrigated cotton field, the exact same cotton field where we had the first case of Roundup resistance documented. There were three herbicide treatments that were applied at four rates each to 2 to 4 inch Palmer amaranth. We had a Weathermax treatment at 22 ounces to 176 ounces per acre, Staple LX at 2.5 to 15 ounces per acre, and then a tank mix of Weathermax plus Staple, which you can see here on the slide. I won't read those off. It was a randomized complete block with four replicates, and we took visual control ratings at 1, 5, and 8 weeks after treatment. All right, I'm going to start off with the glyphosate data, the control provided by WeatherMax. On our y-axis, we have our percent control, and our glyphosate rate is across the x-axis. The bars correspond to our 1, 5, and 8 week observations. The letters, the red letter corresponds to the statistical analysis for the 1 week treatment, the black for the 5 week, the blue for the 8 week. I don't think you really need to focus on those. I think what you should focus on, though, is that 22 ounces, the field rate of glyphosate, provided less than 20% control in this field. When we applied 176 ounces per acre of WeatherMax, we were unable to achieve much more than 80% control. A similar scenario with Staple LX. Even though we did have an increase in the percent control, even at the highest rate, we achieved little more than 60%. Now, the next series of slides I'm going to show you, they're not data slides as much as they are some visual images of our 5 week after treatment observations. This is for WeatherMax 22 ounces plus Staple LX 2.5 ounces. Palmer Amaranth was 2 inches when treated. We had less than 40% control. For the 44 ounces and 5 ounces, we had less than 60% control. For 88 ounces and 10 ounces, less than 80%. And then when we move to our highest rates, an 8X and a 6X rate, 5 weeks after treatment, 2-inch Palmer Amaranth, we had 80 to 90% control. Unfortunately, this picture was taken on one of the cleaner plots, but I can assure you that we did have Palmer Amaranth that survived this treatment and did continue to grow and thrive throughout the remainder of the season. So our next step is we took that seed that was harvested from those plants that survived the treatments in the field into the greenhouse, and we did kind of a quick and dirty experiment so we could compare the offspring from the field plants to a known susceptible, a known glyphosate resistant, and a known ALS resistant population. This was done in the greenhouse. We just had one herbicide treatment at 5 rates applied to 4-inch Palmer Amaranth. It was WeatherMax plus Staple LX at from 3 ounces per acre for the WeatherMax and 1.3 for the Staple up to 48 ounces for the WeatherMax plus 20.8 ounces per acre for the Staple plus our non-treated check. It was a randomized complete block with four replicates. We ran the experiment twice, and we took visual control estimates and fresh weight data at 21 days after treatment. In the greenhouse, I'm just gonna draw your eye to the black line, which is our susceptible population, the response of our susceptible population, and the dark red line, which is our putative, our suspected glyphosate ALS resistant line. And I'm simply gonna point out that these were significantly different. So their response to this tank mix treatment differed significantly. The same was true for our fresh weight as a percent of the untreated check. We had a significant difference in the response of the glyphosate ALS resistant population or biotype to the susceptible. Now, this was just a quick and dirty experiment. We redid this experiment so we could generate traditional Seafelt dose response curves. Again, we took our susceptible, our glyphosate resistant, our ALS resistant, and our multiple resistant biotype. We had two herbicide treatments at 8 rates each applied to 4-inch Palmer Amaranth in the greenhouse. Because the responses were so different between, say, our susceptible population and our ALS when treated with WeatherMax, and our glyphosate ALS resistant when treated with WeatherMax, we had two different sets of rates, so we could generate better curves rather than running them at the same rate and having a poor fit. Because we wanted to capture the I-50. So for the susceptible and the ALS resistant, we went from WeatherMax from 1 to 8 and then an 80 ounce per acre rates. For the glyphosate and the glyphosate ALS, we started at 1 and 8 ounces and went up to 80. We did the same with Staple. We had two different sets of rates based on the resistance. suspected resistance levels in the populations, and we also had a non-treated check. It was a randomized complete block with four replicates with the experiment run twice in time. We did take visual control estimates. Those are what I'm going to present. We have fresh weight data, and we're getting the dry weight data now. Now, the reason I'm not going to present those is literally they came off the table as we were coming to this meeting. I'm also going to kind of preempt and say these are my preliminary dose response curves. I'm going to run them in SAS. This was just something quick so I could show you that was done in Sigma Plot. But we took the data at 21 to 28 days after treatment, and then we can computed a resistance factor, which is simply the I-50 for the resistant biotype divided by the I-50 for the susceptible. What you're going to see is that our susceptible is the black line, and our ALS is the green line. Our glyphosate ALS resistant biotype is the red, and the glyphosate is the purple. When we look at WeatherMax, the response to WeatherMax, the susceptible and the ALS trended together, and the glyphosate and the glyphosate ALS resistant population trended together. And we saw that we had resistance factors of about 16 when we compared the susceptible to the glyphosate, the known glyphosate standard, resistance standard, and a 12 when we compared the susceptible to the glyphosate ALS resistant population. When we look at our dose response curves for staple, am I okay? Okay. We see that our susceptible and our glyphosate resistant trended together, and our ALS and our glyphosate ALS putative population trended together, them being much more resistant. And this time we got a resistance factor of 1,000. So I just want to show the conclusions from the field. With our full season observations, 1 to 8 weeks after treatment, 22 ounces of WeatherMax, we got less than 20% control. That's the field rate. With staple LX, less than 40% control. When we took it up to our highest rates that we applied in the season, and these were when they were applied individually, these herbicides, less than 80% control with WeatherMax and less than 50% control with staple. When we gave the highest rates of WeatherMax and staple in a tank mix, we did achieve 80% control, but I mean, what does that get you? For the greenhouse study, our preliminary experiments indicated that we do have a significant difference in the response to our glyphosate ALS populations from our known susceptible biotype. And when we've done our preliminary dose response curve fitting, we can see that we have a resistance factor of 12 when we compare our susceptible to our glyphosate resistance, and then 1,000-fold when we're looking at the staple. Just something real quick. I wanted to show you what Stanley's been showing you, which is our recommendations in the state of Georgia. When we're focusing on glyphosate, Palmer amaranth, we have a lot of options, even if we're in Roundup Ready cotton. When we move, we start getting into the glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth. You know, we're really asking the farmers to diversify, putting down their preplants, herbicides, diversifying their topicals and their directeds. We don't have but one confirmed case of ALS and glyphosate resistance, multiple resistance in the state. But if we get more cases, this removes staple from our toolbox. The same thing when we're doing it in a dryland conventional tillage system. We do have staple in there. It controls a lot of our weed spectrum in Georgia. It controls our Roundup resistant pigweed. If we get this resistance in, it pulls staple out of our arsenal. If for some reason someone wants to go dry land conservation tillage in the state of Georgia, we don't have any recommendations that we'll stand by, though we do encourage them to move to an Ignite-based system. I just want to finish off by saying that there preventative and management strategies to control resistance have to be enacted over space and time. There's no such thing as a one-year strategy to manage to prevent resistance. Failed management programs can't be repeated. That's going to require a lot of careful crop monitoring and record keeping. Farmers can't say, didn't work with glyphosate last year, I'll go hit it again. Rotation is essential. A lot of our farmers are moving into corn where we have other technologies, or soybeans, other technologies, but we're also encouraging our farmers to diversify the herbicides that go out in the field within a given year. Although we're not encouraging them to overuse it, we're saying only one ALS chemistry per season, one PPO. We are moving to disturbance when possible because it's crucial. We are going to need to till in the state of Georgia. It's that dire. And we're moving to hand removal, as Jeremy Kickler said. Understanding of the weed biology is critical, and we're telling the growers, don't let weeds reach reproductive maturity for the fear of the seed moving, the fear of the pollen moving and spreading the resistance. I'd like to acknowledge the Georgia Cotton Commission and Cotton Incorporated for supporting our research, plus all of our student workers at the University of Georgia who are the backbone of our program. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, we're doing pretty good on time, so if anybody wants one or two quick questions.
Yep. We've only screened this post. I'm just pointing out the farmer put down pre-emergence. I don't, and this is actually a good guess that this is what we suspect that he did. I'm just simply putting the background, but we've only screened for post, and that's all I'm going to, my data is only post applied.
Okay.